This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me. The simple news that nature told with tender majesty. That is a poem by the grand Emily Dickinson. It's very appropriate because I have some exciting news, which I'll get to in a second. I've been thinking about my time here in Designated Loner Zone 281B, and how this little experiment has played out so far, and how privileged I feel to be here, that the government decided that some people needed to be alone, but also that we would be stewards of the land that we lived on. Because they realized, like, oh shit, we developed too much of the land. We need some of it to go back to basically being wild. There's too many people on it. We need more trees. We need more oxygen. You know, these are all part of the national holy fucking shit climate change is real act. You know, once they passed that, we finally, you know, it was basically because Florida went underwater. They were like, oh, it is real. We should do something. Now, some people say we did something too late because a lot of people lost their vacation homes. But we made it work. And thank God we joined together just like the Greatest Generation did. This is one of the positive things about America, too, is that we're actually figuring out climate change, which I appreciate. Because otherwise we'd all be dead in 50 years, which I will be dead in 50 years. Let's be honest. I don't think I'm going to live far past 100, but maybe I will. Maybe I will. We are kind of in the future now and people live longer. So we'll see how that works out. My only thing is I'm just really sad about the fact that if I do reach 100, there's no longer the Today Show. And on the Today Show, they used to do this thing called the Smuckers, like, birthday segment or whatever. And Willard Scott used to do it. And he'd say happy birthday to all these people who are really old, like 99, 100 years old. And they put their little face, their little old, little shriveled up face, cute little old lady face on a jar of Smuckers. And they'd show it. And it was this little sponsored segment that they used to do. And it was really, really just part of a staple of my day. Saying happy birthday to some random woman from Swanee, Tennessee, you know? Loved those. But now, of course, that's gone. And if I do reach 100, I don't get to be on a jar of Smuckers. And I think that that is unfair. That is one of the tragedies of America, too. Anyway. I feel okay with being here. Sometimes I wonder, am I being selfish? Is this a selfish endeavor? And I actually thought about it more pointedly recently because I remembered this article that kind of caused a minor little hubbub, momentary hubbub back in America One. I think it was 2018. The New York Times put out a profile about this man, and it was entitled "The Man Who Knew Too Little." And it was about a man who, after Donald Trump was elected, so like in November 2016, he decided, out of some form of protest, or it wasn't clear what the ultimate purpose was, but he decided to no longer ingest or hear any kind of news. He opted out. He was like, no. I don't want any updates about the world. I don't like this world and I don't want to know anything about it. Don't fucking say anything. Now, a little background. This is a man of great privilege. He was like a tech executive who, you know, made a ton of money, Silicon Valley, then moved to a pig farm in Ohio. Already kind of annoying, right? Well, it got even more annoying because after the election of Trump, he was like, you know what? Fuck all y'all. Fuck this. I don't want to hear one more word about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to hear about it. So what he did is he went to great lengths to block the news from his life. He referred to it as the blockade. Okay. Literally, people in his life were instructed not to say anything. So imagine a huge news event happening, like the Parkland shooting or, anything and not being able to discuss it. Or like a celebrity dying, you know, not being able to discuss it with this guy, you know, and even if you started to say him, he'd be like, no, it's like a guy, it's like someone going, spoiler alert, stop, don't say anything. And it's like, but imagine that being for everything that's ever happened. Now, apparently the only media and news that he would consume would be the weather. He would read art reviews in the New Yorker. I mean, already this guy sounds like such a fucking tool. Art reviews in the New Yorker. And then he would discuss basketball, the Cavaliers, with his mom. And that was, and he would even go to a coffee shop in near his home. And he'd go there, and instead of, he would actually listen to white noise canceling headphones so that he wouldn't hear anybody talking about anything. He would make it so he couldn't hear anything. The baristas and stuff at the coffee shop knew not to say anything. Like, oh, did you hear about, you know, whatever? Like, nothing. He knew nothing. I mean, it was just so weird. Anyway, people were kind of mad that the New York Times even profiled this guy. They were like, what is the point? And I was like, I actually think it was an interesting thing to profile, because this person, it's not a trend piece. This isn't something a lot of people are doing. This is literally like probably the only person doing this intentionally. I'm sure there are people who know nothing, but that's because they are like, you know, they were in a nursing home or something, or they just lived a very simple life and they didn't consume any news. But to not have any of it enter your brain intentionally and to block people from saying stuff to you, I mean, that's so extreme. I'm pretty sure this was like the only guy doing that. So he's an aberration. And I always found it interesting to read about people who were living their lives in a very different way, as privileged as he would. I mean, that was the whole point, which I agreed with. That was my first thought. It was like, of course he can cut off the news from his life. It doesn't affect him. He's like a rich white guy. He doesn't have to worry about DACA or immigration laws or his bodily autonomy being played out in politics, you know, with like women's health issues and things like that. He didn't have to concern himself with that stuff because it didn't affect him. And because his humanity wasn't being questioned by our very culture. So in a way that was very annoying, but as annoying as it was, I thought it was interesting to read about. And some people were like, well, they shouldn't have even written about it. And it's like, okay, well, you don't have to read it. The one thing though that really pissed me off about the article, and I think about it now, given my situation, I'm kind of closed off intentionally from society, and that feels privileged and selfish, but it comes at a great cost. You know, I don't get to have human contact. I don't, get to be part of a community really. And that's very challenging. I'm literally doing a podcast where I just talk into the void. I mean, things aren't okay. Psychologically speaking, y'all, it's fine. But what he said was, he said to deal with the guilt of this, his way of dealing with it was he had a plan. He purchased this huge piece of land near his pig farm, and it had a lake on it. He called it The Lake, all caps, The Lake, you know, or capitalized The Lake. And he was going to be a steward of that land and never sell it and build some kind of building on it that he referred to as the cathedral. I don't really understand what that would be for because I don't think it was religious. And then at the end, when he dies, he's going to donate it. And I was just like, well, wait a minute. So you're going to buy land for yourself, because he lives, I mean, he's not solitary like I am. In this article, he wasn't solitary. So he was going to buy land for himself, play on it. I don't know what he was going to do. And then when he was dead, then people can have it. It's like, what are you doing? Like, buy land and turn it into a public park now. Why are you waiting until you're dead, you selfish prick? Anyway, I might be selfish too. And I thought, I don't know, it made me think. I, however, am not completely cut off from learning about the news. And of course, in America too, we all get our news delivered via drone. And it's comes in a little, you know, like a newspaper. Like, remember those? And you know, you get your updates, but you get them in much less frequently. And I've found mentally that is much easier, because the constant flow of news, just every second updating what's going on, ended up actually being really unhealthy for all of us. So us getting our news summarized for us once a week is actually much, much, much healthier. At least for me, it is. But this week, this is the exciting thing I was teasing. This week, I actually, well, I got a letter, y'all. And it's the first one I've gotten in a really long time. And I'm so excited. I got a letter from a friend that's out there. His name is Elliot Kalin. Elliot and I go way back. Elliot and I actually met when I first started out in New York City in comedy in America One. And I was doing this biweekly. I don't know why it was biweekly, because it was actually too much work to do it weekly. I mean, like, it was impossible because I put so much effort into it. Doing it weekly would have killed me while also working at a full-time job in a law firm. But I had this this show called Sarah Schaefer is Obsessed with You. And it was a bi-weekly talk show that I put on in the basement. I first started it, man, it was a weird time. I was very young in comedy. I first started it in this, it was this venue above a strip club in Times Square. And it was this, it almost felt like a fellowship hall or like a place where you'd go to an AA meeting. And had a little stage on one end, and we set up chairs. And for a very short time, this show existed there, but it ended up mainly taking place in the basement underneath another theater in NoHo, which was north of Soho, north of Houston Street in New York. It was on Bond Street, and it was this little theater, and we called it Juvie Hall. And I put it on every other week, and the concept of the show was it was a talk show, but instead of it set at a regular late night host desk, I had a cubicle, and the whole conceit was that I was putting on the show from my day job. And it was glorious. I had like a couple writers helping me out. I had a guest. I had two guests every time, or maybe one guest, depending on who I could get. But I at least had one guest who, and all that it required was, because, you know, this was my rock bottom version of a talk show, I had to get a celebrity. And my version of celebrity at the time was someone who had been on Law & Order. Because in New York, you know, with that franchise, there were so many people who had been dead bodies on Law & Order, played extras, you know, the person who discovers the body at the beginning of the episode. There was always somebody who's like jogging and they're like, oh my God, there's a dead body. And they act kind of like nonchalant about it. And you're like, wait a minute, wouldn't I? New Yorkers aren't that jaded. If you came upon a dead body, you would freak the fuck out. That was usually the first opening scene of any Law & Order episode is when they find the dead body. So I had anybody that had been on Law & Order. And there was an endless supply of them. And it was great. And that was fun. And then I had a musical guest. And I'd do a monologue and there'd be sketches. And it was just so much work and so much fun. And I was obsessed with it. Obviously, given the title, I was obsessed with Sarah Schaefer's Obsessed with You. And I had so much fun doing that show. And after my show, so it was like we did it every other Friday night. And after my show, there was another talk show called The Midnight Kalin. And that was hosted by Elliot. Now, before, actually, you know what? I just remembered there was actually something that Elliot and I did together before Sarah Schaefer's Obsessed with You, which was, it was called The Tomb of Comedy, and it was three sketch duos. And I had a sketch duo briefly with this guy, a great comedian and writer, Adam Lowitt, and he ended up becoming the showrunner of The Daily Show later on. And Elliot became the head writer. They both worked at The Daily Show when I met them. Elliot was an intern, and Adam was a PA. They worked their way all the way up to the top. It was very great to see that happen for them. Anyway, it was we would put on a sketch show, and it was me and it was Lowitt and Schaefer. Elliot was in a duo called The Hypocrites, and then there was another one, Plants Need Water or something like that. I can't remember them. It was these two other guys, Jason Reisch and somebody else, who I can't remember his name now. Anyway, so Elliot was a good friend of mine, always thought he was so funny, and he put on this show called The Midnight Kalin. And it was such an original, funny show. And then, of course, Elliot and I stayed friends all throughout that time in America One. I ended up working with him later on this special for Comedy Central that Ed Helms created called The Fake News with Ted Nelms. And it was just great. So anyway, I miss Elliot. We're still friends, but I'm so excited because I got a letter from him. And it's just like, it's like Christmas morning for me. And I know it took me a really long time to get to the letter, which is the most exciting part of this episode. And I do apologize for that. All right, here we go. Dear Sarah, hello out there in the loner zone. How are you? How's your loner time going? Obviously, I've already updated everyone on that, so I don't need to answer that question right now. But anyway, back to Elliot. I really envy how you've gotten back to the land. I'm tempted to try it, but I have too many bad memories from National Swap Week, when everyone in the cities traded lives with everyone in the countryside so they could get a sense of how the other half lives. Obviously, National Swap Week was an experiment that happened early on in America, too, which we all remembered. It was a crazy thing. But anyway, I nearly lost my toe in a milking machine accident, and Roy Bainey, the farmer I swapped with, lost my job after he turned in just a really terrible script for This Is Also Us, the This Is Us spinoff that I was writing for at the time. Great show. Great work, Elliot, but I'm sad that you got fired from it. I do worry about your health, though. Are you able to visit the doctor ever? Well, Elliot, that's a great question. So in order to get into the designated loner program, you had to pass rigorous health tests, both psychological and physical, because you were going to have such limited access to health care. And almost like you were going to the International Space Station or Mars or something, you had to go through all these tests, which, of course, I passed with flying colors because, as you know, I did CrossFit, so I was in really good shape. Now, when you need medical help or anything in a loner program, you have to go into Drone Mall and go into urgent care virtually, and you know, kind of message back and forth with the doctor. You can FaceTime, show them, you know, whatever weird bump you've got. And yes, it's different from being in person, but at least it's an initial triage of whatever symptoms you might be having, and then you can purchase your medications through Drone Mall as well, which, of course, are greatly discounted because we did finally fix Obamacare. We didn't repeal and replace. We reformed and revitalized and made it really, really socialist. A lot of people didn't like that. But in the end, they liked it because they got free Claritin. So, yeah, I have an initial thing. But in case of emergency, I do have one toolkit, which I have a whole first aid kit and all these things. But I also have this book for more advanced medical emergencies called FM21-76, the U.S. Army Survival Manual. And this was a survival manual that they actually put out for the military years and years ago. But it's very handy when you're having medical problems and you're by yourself in the wilderness. So, for instance, I'm on page 15-7. First at the top, I just flipped open to it. Constipation. Okay, it tells you how to deal with that. Putting off relieving yourself because of the cold, eating dehydrated foods, drinking too small amount of liquid, and irregular eating habits can cause you to become constipated and then, you know, increase your fluid intake. So it has all these little interesting tips. I didn't mean to turn to constipation first. But yeah, so it has some, how to put on a tourniquet, how to set a broken bone. And, you know, and I've thankfully never had to deal with those things. But, you know, in the case of a real, real health emergency, I would have to go to my designated loner emergency health center, which would mean I would actually have to leave 281B. But luckily, I haven't had to do that at this point. But thank you for being concerned, Elliot. Back to your letter. I'm living over in the aging yuppie hipster parent DBZ. It's basically what you think it would be like. Everyone's still wearing their ironic vintage t-shirts and Cub Scout jackets over their pot bellies, and Monday night is mandatory book group night, when we all have to talk about Miranda July and Haruki Murakami. Tuesday through Sunday, of course, all we talk about is where our children went to preschool and how expensive that was. I'm keeping busy with my successful photo album business. I'm allowed to sell photo albums outside of Drone Mall because everything in the aging yuppie hipster parent DBZ has to be small batch and locally sourced, of course. Anyway, with the collapse of social media, so many of us lost all of our images of our children, all those precious photographs and videos, and those things where you thought you were taking a picture, but it was actually like a 3-second video and it would take up way more space on your phone. Anyway, I fabricate photo albums based on parents' descriptions of their kids. I never get it exactly right, but all of our memories are starting to go with age, so I get very few complaints. That's great, Elliot. I mean, I never knew that you could draw. I'm curious to know if you were drawing the memories or doing very photo-like realistic painting, which I know is very challenging, or were you using some other kind of medium? That's interesting. Anyway, back to Elliot. As I was cutting a picture of a baby out of an old Life magazine, well, just answered my question. Wow, that's really interesting, Elliot. So you're taking pictures of other babies and putting it into. Okay. That's hilarious. And obviously very lucrative. As I was cutting a picture of a baby out of an old Life magazine, I started thinking about back when I just moved to Los Angeles and you and I lived across the Silver Lake Reservoir from each other. We always talked about making plans to get together, but we never actually did, even though I could literally see your house from my house, which is true. Oh, yeah, we should have gotten together. Things were much simpler then. Or maybe they were more complicated. Who's to say? Anyway, I was thinking about how, at the time, it seemed like every week some comedian we knew was getting their own topical comedy show so they could deliver their unique skewed slant on the news. Of course, their skewed slant was never unique. It usually wasn't even that different from what you'd just get from reading liberal Twitter that morning. But we had to watch all of them and share videos from them as if doing so was somehow striking a blow against the conservative power brokers who owned the companies making the satirical shows anyway. So they weren't exactly unhappy we were watching their shows. More and more, I think all those shows were a bad thing. Not just because of the St. Louis satire riots, when the arch was burned down to protest how there were too many satire shows, but also because something that started as the voice of outsiders speaking truth to power and risking the world's scorn turned into just another boring standard, easy to ignore, part of the media glut we lived in. There was this one night when five different talk shows made basically the same joke about how it's crazy Trump didn't sign his NDA with Stormy Daniels because he loved putting his name on everything. I remember that. They did. It was five different talk shows made exactly the same joke about Trump and Stormy Daniels on the same night. And it was like a real lesson in original joke writing and parallel thinking and joke thievery and, like, you know, how it's really hard to accuse people of that because sometimes you all just come up with the same joke. Anyway, back to Elliot. For me, that's when we finally reached peak topical comedy. The number of people saying things was now greater than the number of things to say. Soon, it became a point of pride for a comedian not to have a topical satire show. Well, I can tell you it was a huge point of pride for me, because I certainly tried to make it happen. And then when we did reach peak topical comedy, and this is Sarah speaking, this is my first time trying to read a letter on this podcast to no one, and it's just, I don't know if it's working, but the letter's great. I'm just so happy that I have it. I'm going to read it out loud probably four times tonight. Anyway. Back to Elliot. It all reminds me of something you said in Carpool Karaoke, the movie. You said, sometimes I wanted something so much that I started hating. Wait, let me go back. It all reminds me of something you said in Carpool Karaoke, the movie. You said, sometimes I wanted something so much that I start hating it. At that time, you were talking about Justin Timberlake's 17th album. But it kind of applies here, too. And I know you don't like being reminded that you were in Carpool Karaoke, the movie, but you were pretty good in it. All right, breaking in for a second. Elliot, thank you. Carpool Karaoke, the movie, not my best career moment, not my best artistic decision, but the role came to me, obviously, after all my wild success. After 2018, the role came to me, and part of the reason they wanted me was because I am known to be a really good lip syncer. Some of my earliest YouTube hits, and this is real, were lip syncing videos. I put out a one where I had lip synced to the song "Happy" by Pharrell. Why don't I know how to say his name? Is that who sang it? I don't know. Okay. I lip synced "Happy," and I did a little, you just have to watch it to get what I did. I lip synced Secret Ambition. And I like to speed them up to chipmunk speed because it made it really funny. So sometimes I do that. And the when you move around fast, it looks funny, and I would make the video speed up. Anyway, I was really good at lip syncing. And I made lip syncing videos for a while when that was like a popular thing to do. Of course, then later on came James Corden's Carpool Karaoke segment, and then an entire spinoff show, and then came the entire spinoff movie, which they cast me in. And yeah, it was a money grab on my part, but it also came from a place of artistic integrity for me because it's something that I'm really good at. And in fact, it was my only time, I'm ashamed to say, my only time, there was no other opportunity until we hit the end of America 1, to attend the Oscars. I actually got to perform on the Oscars because of Carpool Karaoke, the movie. There was a song from the movie, an original song, that was actually nominated for Best Song. Now, people were like, why the fuck is Carpool Karaoke, the movie, being nominated for an Oscar? Well, it's because we had a song in the movie by Randy Newman. And the name of the song was Don't Forget Your Dead Relatives. And it was really sad. And I actually got to perform it on the Oscars. And by perform, I mean I got to lip sync it. In a car, obviously. It was this cool thing. They brought a car on stage, and I was in it with Colin Firth, who was my co-star. And James Corden, of course, was in it. He was hosting that year. But anyway, it was a really great opportunity to go to the Oscars. And we were nominated for Best Song because, one, Randy Newman is kind of a shoo-in. But also the other nominees that year were – let's just say it was a bad year for original songs for movies, because one of the other nominees was this song, I Am a Strong Black Woman. And it was sung by Justin Timberlake and Lena Dunham. And that got nominated for Best Song, which – some people were very angry about, and I mean, I was too, but at least it gave us a chance to win. But we didn't win. Of course, Best Song went to Ka-Ka, which was from the Pixar movie that year, which was a delightful romp called Ka-Ka. And then the title song, Ka-Ka, it was about a bunch of birds chilling out on a pile of trash at the dump. It was a great Pixar film. Ka-Ka was sung and performed, obviously, by Fergie, which she did a great job. Very sultry version of it on that night. She went sultry again. She brought it back. She was like, Ka-Ka, 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 baby. I wish these people had cut up the six rings from their six pack of Diet Coke, cause it's strangling my baby bird. Ka-Ka. Best song at the Oscars that year. We should have known that shit was about to hit the fan when those were the songs that were being written for movies. I'm just glad I'm a Strong Black Woman didn't win. I mean, that was truly offensive. That Justin Timberlake and Lena Dunham were singing. Lena Dunham can't even sing, but yet she was part of that song. But anyway, back to Elliot's letter. I'm sorry, that was a real digression, but I did have to kind of fill everybody in on Carpool Karaoke, the movie. Back to Elliot. Anyway, I've got to go record my podcast, The Flop House, but that's not so surprising. Everyone in the aging yuppie hipster parents DBZ has a podcast. Of course they do. Enjoy living in the woods. Write back if the loner rules allow you to do that. Elliot. Well, Elliot, thank you so much. I am allowed to write letters from the Loner Zone program, but we have to do it on an old-timey typewriter. That's like kind of part of being a loner in the woods, is you have to have an old-timey typewriter. And mine right now is, it's down. I've got to order some parts for it to fix it. I'm lucky because I actually, if you're in the federal loaner program, the coolest celebrity on earth actually donated his typewriters to the loaner program. And that would be, of course, be Tom Hanks. because he collected in America One. He was known to be a collector of old-timey typewriters. So thank you, Tom Hanks, for my typewriter. Unfortunately, it's broken, and maybe you should have given me one that works, you piece of shit. Anyway, I'll leave you guys on this. Elliot, thank you so much for writing in. Thank you. I guess you're my first quote-unquote guest on the podcast. That's pretty exciting. Cool. Well, if you're listening out here, there somewhere, if you somehow got a hold of this, I'll just leave you on this. Birds living in the trash.